What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Fenway Rundown presented by Mass Live. This is Mass Live's Red Sox podcast. As always, I'm your host, Chris Cotillo. Today, we're joined by my co-beat writer, as we sometimes are. Chris Smith is here with us. We have a lot to talk about, a lot to get to. It's been a while since we've recorded, and it's been a really busy month for the Red Sox. In addition to being a first-place team and playing a lot in July, as every major league team does, they've done a lot, extending Matt Barnes. The draft was a couple weeks ago. Marcelo Meyer is the newest member of the Red Sox organization, number four overall pick. He was at Fenway earlier this week, officially signed. There's trade rumors. Jaron Duran is a member of the team. Tanner Houck's been called up. A few games against the Yankees, lots of rain, lots to get to. But today we're going to really focus on a couple things. Number one, Duran. And number two, a preview of the trade deadline, which as we record this on July 23rd is a week away. It's July 30th this year, Friday at 4 o'clock. We're starting to see some moves get made. Then some moves by the Red Sox chief competition in the American League East. Last night, the Rays acquired Nelson Cruz from the Twins. Just a few minutes ago, for some reason, they decided to sell and traded Rich Hill to the Mets, probably to shed some payroll. So some creative moves by the Rays. We'll get to that. But first, we'll bring in Chris Smith and talk about something that we're now a week into the Jaron Duran era in Boston. He obviously has not played every day, which I think is a little bit of a surprise. But Chris, I know you're a guy that's followed Duran even before he was really on the radar of everybody else. What have you thought of his first few games in the majors?
Yeah, he's been fine. I mean, you know, I don't know how it's going to go here. Tim Hires, the hitting coach, he said there's going to be some lumps here, and there is going to be. You know, we see this with everybody. Wander Franco, didn't start off great. He's a rookie. His numbers were interesting in Worcester, where they were really good at home, where that park plays like a PCL park.
Yep.
And they were not so good on the road. I don't think they would have brought him up unless they felt he was ready. I just don't think that he's going to be the impact player right away that everybody is anticipating him to be. I think there's going to be some growing pains. Was impressive though, you know, the other night when he hit a home run. He goes the opposite field, gets his pitch, goes the opposite field on a fastball. There's some good signs, but you know, I think what he went like 1 for 5 or 1 for 6 in that game, you know, so it's like, Cora thinks he's having good at bats so far, you know, like really, you know, swinging at strikes and letting balls go and stuff like that. Just haven't seen enough of him. I wish he would play every day. I think that he's a guy that you need to come up and play every day if you're going to have him there. And I would put Kike obviously at second as the everyday guy there. When Andrew Benintendi came up, he played every day and there were questions about him against lefties. Jaron Duran's numbers are pretty good. I think he's actually really good against lefties.
Better splits this year against lefties and righties, or better OPS. And
doesn't mean everything though. You know, I've seen, you know, we're looking at it with Verdugo right now. You know, I mean, he's always been good against lefties, and this year, you know, as Hires kind of explained, like he's a guy that has a level swing and fastballs up, and they're throwing him two seamers down. Left-handers. So it's like, you know, this is a whole different scenario, you know, between the minors and the majors in terms of, splits and stuff like that. But I would like to see him. And perhaps he wasn't in the lineup the past couple of days just because they were really good lefties. Like, you know, Robbie Ray's a really good left. I mean, he's really tough.
Since June 1st, he's been great.
What's that?
Since June 1st, he was like in the top five in baseball in every category before that outing.
But yeah, I mean, like, his dominance against the left-handers, I mean, you know, he has a 160, he entered that game with a 165 batting average against.
And both times against Montgomery, Duran didn't start.
Yeah. And I mean, he's really good against lefties too. So it's like, you know, maybe if it's another lefty, maybe they do start him. I don't know. We saw Verdugo and not start against Ray the other day. And as I said, Verdugo has had a tough time against lefties, but, you know, Cora explained it as this is a very tough lefty. And so, you know, this won't be the usual.
I think with Duran, you know, we have seen the flashes, like you talked about, the opposite field home run in Buffalo. I think obviously showing no fear against Garrett Cole and taking the first pitch and, you know, lining it into center for a single, I think that's obviously a good sign. We saw just last night or very early this morning in extra innings when he comes in as a pinch runner, flies around from first and scores on that game tying double by Kike Hernandez. So he's a guy that's making an impact on the game. I don't think we've really gotten a great chance to see what he can do in center so far. There haven't been, you know, really any moments that stick out. But you know, he's here and he's obviously probably here to stay, and it's going to cause some shuffling for the Red Sox. So, you know, what's interesting is, and I asked Heim Bloom this direct question the other day in the Bronx, but why now for Duran? Like, why was now the perfect time? And he said, there's no perfect time. We just kept having conversations and we realized this was it. He said it wasn't really planned coming out of the All-Star break. Like, you know, I think you can look at it and say, all right, they called him out right at the, you know, beginning of the second half, and a kind of, you know, him and Houck were coming up right at the beginning of the second half. I think that was the plan with Houck. It wasn't the plan with Duran. Do you have a sense of why now, or why a week ago was the right time for them?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, they wanted to be careful with his development. They wanted to give him enough games at, you know, at Triple-A. I mean, he had, you know, if you look at his game log, I mean, he had never played Triple-A before this year, and he hadn't played a ton of Double-A, and those games that he did play at Double-A, he wasn't, you know, great. I actually heard that his at-bats were pretty good at Double-A, even though the results weren't there. But, you know, so they wanted to give him time, and I think that that's, you know, I think we'll see that a lot with Bloom is that, you know, he wanted him to get the most development possible before they really needed him. They didn't really need him until just now, right? I mean, you know, some guys going on the IL, mm-hmm. You know, in the offense not being great, you know, of late. They wanted something to jumpstart. So, you know, I mean, give him, you know, how many games did he play in Worcester? Like 40 or 50, 40 to 45. He may have played less than that just because he was
46. He was in
46. So, yeah. Like, you know, I mean, that's a good sample size or good experience in AAA. He's an older guy, 24, right? And so, you know, it's not like you have to keep him there forever, but they wanted to keep him there.
25 in September too.
Yeah, I think that, you know, he's mature. They've realized that, like, in terms of, you know, like, he isn't going to have fair, as you mentioned, the Garrett Cole at bat. You know, he comes right up, first pitch swinging. Hits it. So he, you know, he has a good approach. He's mature enough that I think that they realize that if he struggles, it's not going to kill him as a player.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
It's not going to kill him as a player, meaning he's not going to get down on himself so much that he's so down on himself that derails his career.
You mentioned kind of the positional or the injuries that are starting to kind of cause that. And obviously, you know, the Red Sox have really avoided the significant injury bug all season. The storyline there has been, you know, the five starters have been completely healthy the whole year. The bullpen, you know, the key pieces there have been healthy. 1 through 9, your starters. I think Christian Arroyo is kind of your only semi-impact player that's gotten hurt. Right now, you know, the three position players that are out, Marwin Gonzalez, Danny Santana, Christian Arroyo, that forced Duran up, and it forced another guy we've talked about on this podcast before, and Red Sox fans have talked about a lot, and Franchi Cordero, who's now up. The lineup's not out as of when we record this. I expect him to get some starts against righties and play first base. Do you expect, I mean, obviously, we're going to get probably something in between the big league version of Franchi that hit 179 and the Triple A version of Franchi, who was MVP level in Worcester. What are your expectations, and which side of that coin do you think he'll be closer to?
Yeah, I mean, he was unbelievable for the first, you know, month and a half, 2 months he was there. You know, I mean, he was ripping the ball everywhere and insane numbers. He's cooled down in this month, you know, July.
Still a 955 OPS in 44 games there.
Yeah, so that, I mean, he could just be getting bored too, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
That's like when you're really good still, like, you know, obviously we don't know this, but like when you're, you know, Harvard student, you know, sitting in a class when you're in the grammar school,
yeah,
you just get bored because you're so smarter than everybody else. So he just,
right, might be bored. He was ready.
But yeah, with him, I would like to see him play because I think even before he went down to, you know, Worcester, before he was option there, and I think it was important to option him there, his at bats were better. he wasn't striking out as much, I think.
And he hit the ball. His last week with the Red Sox, he hit a ball about 750 feet. People forget
that. Exactly, yes. So, and you predicted it, right? Like 5 days before?
One night before. And then I said, actually, I meant tomorrow. And then it happened. So we're going to count it.
So, like, you know, I think that he's going to – I'm really interested to see how he'll come up and hit. You know, if he catches fire, you know, he's confident in himself right now. This could be a huge addition. We're looking at, like, the trade deadline coming up and, you know, the possibility of them getting a left-handed hitting first baseman to platoon with Dahl back. Well, you know, maybe he shows over – I don't know if it's a great sample size to show for the next week. And but, you know,
at least
maybe,
a couple
maybe he becomes that guy, you know, or maybe, you know, he has the ability to jumpstart some things. So I'm interested. As I said, I think he was a little bit better as time went on this year. And then, you know, awesome in Worcester. So, and, you know, he's learned first base pretty quickly. He didn't make any errors down in Worcester, so that's positive, and we'll see how he does.
I think, you know, this is a good segue to the trade deadline discussion, because the Red Sox have the potential to add four impact players, obviously Duran, obviously Chris Sale, obviously Tanner Houck, and somewhat less obviously, you know, Franchi Cordero, four potential impact players to the roster this week or in last week without having to give anything up at all. I mean, the moves are, you know, Danny Santana goes to the IL, or, you know, these guys who haven't really produced are off the roster. And now you have these potential impact players coming up, and you don't have to give up prospects like other teams are going to make these upgrades. And I think that they're in a position of strength when it comes to the trade deadline, when it comes to those things. Obviously, you know, they know that what, assuming he's healthy, they're, what they're going to get out of Sale. And I feel like they know what at this point what they're going to get out of Houck and maybe Duran a little bit in that limited role. So, I mean, I just look at the trade deadline and I think this is not a team with a ton of holes. And when you look at the holes, they are things that can be filled by these guys. And so to me, and like I said, to start our trade deadline discussion, that makes me feel like it might be a pretty slow deadline for Chaim Bloom and his crew.
Yeah, the other thing, though, you have to think about is the fact that, you know, they have a lot of guys that are Rule 5 eligible in, you know, December 2021.
Right.
And so, you know, you can't afford to – I mean, you can't put, like, 10 guys on your roster in November from the minors.
And there's not a lot of spots.
They have some interesting guys that are Rule 5 eligible that – you know, could be picked up like Whitlock was picked up by them, you know, last year. So, you know, those are tradable guys. You know, you got a guy like Cutter Crawford who's dominating right now at Portland and as a starter. And, you know, he's on the fringe. It's like, well, you've got other guys like, you know, Brian Bailey.
Winkowski's one, right?
Winkowski's one, yep. And I mean, so there's a lot of guys that, you know, looking at the list right now, actually, Jimenez is going to, you know, there's just a lot. German. Is it German or? Yeah.
German.
Yeah. And, you know, there's just a lot of guys. Downs needs to be added. And there's so many guys in the, like, you know, you look at like a Pedro Castellanos, who I actually added in the notebook this past week, like this guy, and also, you know, a guy like, you know, Devlin Granberg, you know, they're both hitting really well at Portland. They're not striking out, which is really impressive, but they're like guys that are on the fringe. Like, do you protect them or do you leave them unprotected? So those are guys that you can maybe afford to trade right now and get something back.
And so what is your wish list? Is it the lefty first baseman first? Is it a reliever? Is it starting depth? I don't think they need starting depth myself, but
I don't think they need starting depth either. I think that the best thing would be, and I mentioned this on a podcast a couple months ago or whatever, is like a Steve Pierce type guy, like a guy that you can get
reverse Steve Pierce, the lefty.
Yeah. So a guy that you can get for, you know, a mid-level prospect like Espinal. And, you know, we're talking about guys right here, you know, that are mid-level type prospects. I mean, these are guys that are 10 to 20 range in the Red Sox system. And so, you know, who is that? I don't know. Do you have some ideas actually?
I think, you know, and others have written about it. Sean McAdam at BSJ wrote about the kind of the possibilities, and there's not a ton of left-handed hitting first baseman that fit. One that he pointed out was Asdrubal Cabrera with the Diamondbacks. Another, I mean, he'd be the 18th utility man on the roster, but he's a guy that would seem to fit. One name that I have heard that the Red Sox might have some interest in is Jesus Aguilar with the Marlins. He's a righty, but you know, there's also a school of thought here that Bobby Dalbec has not performed well enough to like 100% deserve that platoon role. Like they could just get a full-time first baseman, you know, like they could just acquire Rizzo or Aguilar, or I think
that's true.
I think Rizzo is a little bit, you know, rich for their blood. I don't think they're going to do it. I think it's slightly possible. I don't think they're going to do it. But it's not like, you know, like Mitch Moreland was performing well and they needed a right-handed complement with Steve Pierce. Bobby Dalbec, to me, it's not like he's earned necessarily, you know, oh, well, they're not going to get a full-time guy to replace him.
Yeah, so that brings up an interesting point. It's like, you know, could you trade Dalbec for a guy that's under control for like a first baseman that's under control for, you know, because they're always talking about they, you know, they would prefer not rentals. They would prefer guys that are under control. If they're going to make a trade and trade prospects, that, you know, they would like somebody that's under control beyond this season. And
right.
So maybe like, you know, Carlos Santana, you know, and, you know, send Dalbec to the Royals. Would they do that? I don't know. I mean, you know, he's, you know, there's a lot of upside with him. You look at like some of the advanced things and he's barreling a lot of bat balls, you know, and that's positive. And, you know, he had a good 2 months last year, a month last year. And there is obviously like, he has an immense amount of power. I mean, his power is outrageous. And, you know, it's, and they, you know, Cora said it the other day, he was like, I just thought I know he's a guy that can, you know, that knows the strike zone. And that's been kind of the big surprising thing is, mm-hmm. you know, he hasn't done that, but you know, they could sell him as somebody that did. So, you know, I mean, this is a guy that potentially could go at the trade deadline. You bring in a full-time first baseman, or, you know, you send him to Kansas City or wherever with some, you know, another prospect and, you know, bring somebody in. What's your, do you think that could be a possibility?
I just think you can't send another heartthrob to Kansas City. I think you've already done that with Benintendi and you can't do that with Dalbec. I think there'd be a revolt.
He's a good looking guy.
But, and a Fenway rundown alum. So people forget, you know,
That's true.
Yeah, that's obviously the position. If you look at across the diamond, you know, at second, if Duran's playing center, you're going to have Kike there. Christian Arroyo has proven that he, you know, if he's healthy, which is a big if, can give you a lot. It'd be interesting to see kind of the thought on how long he'll be out. Obviously your left side of the infield is all-star level. Your bench, you're going to have a couple of interesting people there, whether it's Dalbec or Franchi. You know, obviously, you know, Marwin and Danny Santana, when they're healthy, will be there. Catcher's taken care of. So you look at the pitching staff. We talked about rotation depth, and you briefly said you agreed they don't need that. And so, you know, how do you see this shaking out? You know, we have Houck is now part of the six-man rotation for a little bit. Chris Sale, in front of my very eyes the other night, pitched very well in Portland, had guys doing pirouettes, and poor Harrisburg Senators batters were spinning around on a slider, which is a good sign for the Red Sox. I am projecting, and I know a couple other people have tweeted this out, my guess is that Chris Sale makes his Red Sox season debut on August 10th at home against the Rays. That would be, I think, three more rehab outings. I just, for some reason, think that they want to start him at home after the off day and they don't want to start him on the road. I don't know why that is, but I just have a feeling. So he comes back August 10th. Tanner Houck is still on the mix. Who are your five in the rotation at that point?
Yeah, I mean, depending on how Houck pitches, you know, you got to keep in the hot hand when it's late in the season. I mean, they sent, you know, the San Diego Padres sent Garrett Richards to the bullpen late last year too, yep. You know, and so, you know, I mean, if he's pitching better,
great the other night too.
I mean, whoever's pitching best, I guess, at that point. And it's going to be, you know, I mean, did you ever feel like Chris Sale couldn't come back? Like the Tommy John surgery was like the best thing to happen. You know, like they say, oh, if you can avoid surgery, that's the best thing. But, you know, he's coming back. His velocity looks great. You know, he's like the hardest worker, right? And so he's a guy that can't come back from Tommy John surgery.
He's in better shape too, which is almost impossible. Like he, you know, being up close with him for the first time in a long time, obviously. He like kind of has muscle now. Like he looked like he's stronger than he ever was. Which, so you know, there is not a lot of muscle in that frame before.
You know, if you're going to bank on somebody to, you know, be that revert to their form that they were pre Tommy John surgery, it's definitely like a Chris Sale guy, you know, right. And I'm not saying that he's going to be like that, you know, for the final 2 months of this year, but you know, going forward, I was just actually thinking about it today. I mean, you got a rotation next year where you potentially could have Chris Sale, you know, Tanner Houck, Garrett Whitlock,
Pavetta and Eovaldi.
Ethan Eovaldi. So it's like,
Pavetta, you know, you're fifth, and Pavetta's been great.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think, you know, it depends on who, you know, who's not pitching well at that point. And Martin Perez, like, is there anybody with an ERA that's like more lucky than Martin Perez?
Well, it's also in like 80 innings.
I mean, holy manoli. Like, you know, he's got like a four one sit. I don't know.
We're going to slide past the holy manoli because you're like 36 or 37. And you shouldn't be doing that.
But is that a weird word?
I think it's just an old thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I grew up with, you know, old parents. So, you know, right. They had me at an old age. So I have all these old words. But, but no, but seriously, though, like, yeah, I mean, Perez hasn't pitched well at all this year, so he's easily could go, you know, in the bullpen or, you know, if they want to even release him, they could do that.
But I mean, like at a certain point, don't you want your best stuff guys, like in the bullpen? Like, what about you set it up so your top four, five are in the bullpen are obviously Barnes on Ottavino and Taylor, but then Whitlock and Houck like for seventh. Eighth inning guys for matchups. I mean, I know those guys are starters long term, but isn't that kind of enticing to have those guys coming in and blowing guys away for an inning or two?
Yeah. So you actually bring up like a good point here, like the super reliever type. We saw Andrew Miller as a super reliever, you know, in the 2016 playoffs, right? That's the year the Cleveland Guardians went to the Guardians, right?
Well, they're not that yet.
But anyway. Back then Cleveland Indians went to the World Series, but like you obviously Whitlock couldn't do that in the postseason, like that type of role, because they're just not going to put him out there every day, you know, and health wise, they've been so cautious with him the whole year. But if you have two guys like that, like in Houck and Whitlock, they could bridge the gap from the starter to the, you know, to Ottavino and to Barnes. Taylor. And Taylor, I mean, so like, you know, so you've got those two guys. I mean, yeah, it would be a good mix. And so, but yeah, so that, you know, you have interesting things to, you know, to consider just because he's the best, you know, he's pitching the best. It also, you know, he could be more valuable in the bullpen in that kind of role.
Right.
Especially when you talk about the postseason, because as we saw, you know, relievers are so important. We saw that in 2018 with, you know, Nathan Eovaldi.
There's so many options. It's like they have so many good problems, whether it's, you know, okay, do you want to make Houck a starter and then you add some depth in Perez or Richards, whoever goes to the bullpen, or keep those guys in the rotation and keep them with shorter stints and have like Perez and Houck or Perez and Whitlock be piggyback kind of guys, which they kind of have been throughout the year. And those things, to me, those problems create less question marks at the trade deadline. Like, why go out and spend two prospects? I know there's a roster crunch and I know that, you know, there's some guys that there's deals that, you know, probably would be smart to make, but why go out and spend a couple prospects on a guy when you can put Tanner Houck in a high leverage role in your bullpen for free, you know? And I think that kind of is what the whole roster looks like. We're kind of running low on time here, so I'll start wrapping up. But so if I'm the Red Sox, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to acquire a first baseman for cheap. Just because I think Franchi could do it, but potentially, and he could show you that he can do it, but there's not enough time. So get a left-handed hitting first baseman or a full-time first baseman, like we talked about, maybe somebody a little above just a platoon guy, and then get, you know, your classic rental reliever, death taxes and contenders acquiring rental relievers, whoever that is, whether it be, you know, an Ian Kennedy type, or, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And those guys are not going to cost you a lot. And you know what? They're going to be an upgrade over Brandon Workman or Yaxel Rios or whoever your last guy in the bullpen is, you know, all the Red Sox are like I said, adding from within, but you know, why not with the types of guys that they can get for those mid-level guys that they, you know, are going to have to roster crunch anyway. Is that, would you make any more aggressive moves? Or I feel like, you know, there's always the fans want the big move. I just don't see like how that fits this team.
Yeah. And I think that I want to preface this with, I do not listen to sports radio much, but when I have listened to it, you know, they're already criticizing Bloom for not making like a move. You know, they're criticizing him for things that he hasn't even done yet, you know? And like, I mean, I think that they're a type of team that, you know, yeah, they should make a move for, you know, that first baseman, but they're, you know, he's in a position where if he, you know, doesn't make certain moves, I mean, he shouldn't get killed for it. You talk about what they're looking at, and, you know, Cora said they've thrown some names around so far. You know, I'm sure Bloom keeps him in the loop. Like, what do you think about this guy we're thinking about? What do you think about this guy? And, you know, he talked about the ability, like a Steve Pierce type, like he said, we don't need Gary Sheffield, you know, back in the old days, you know, when Gary Sheffield was a good boy.
Yeah.
Don't need a superstar like Gary Sheffield. You don't need a superstar like Nelson Cruz, like the Rays just added. You just need some guy that's going to, you know, help make this offense a little bit better than it has been with Bobby Dahl back in it. And so, you know, I would say, like, you know, wait to see what, you know, wait to see what Franchi can do. I mean, you have the ability to see what Franchi can do over some time, because you could put, because if he doesn't perform, you could put Arroyo at first. But Arroyo's just, I mean, he gets injured so much.
Right. I don't know if you can trust him there, but he's been great when he plays. So lots of irons in the fire with a week to go. We'll be covering it all on Mass Live. I'll end it with this, a quote from Chaim Bloom from last week in our conversation about the trade deadline. Asked exactly what his plans were heading in, if he was willing to maybe sacrifice the long-term goals and give up some prospects for 2021. Here's what he said. I think the fact we are where we are and that it's come as a byproduct of following the blueprint we set out should only fuel our fire to see this through. Our position in the standing matters. 2021 and success in 2021 is part of this bigger long-term goal that we're trying to build towards. We need to respect that. We need to be mindful of it, and we need to do what we can to win this year just like we will every year. That's Chaim Bloom on the deadline. We've been Chris Smith and Chris Cotillo on the Fenway Rundown. We'll be back with plenty of coverage this week.